Yes.
Treasurer Eby.
No.
President Verheyen.
Yes.
Good conversation.
They're in the spirit of things.
Okay, moving on to item number E3, supplemental water policy discussion. Mr. LeBron.
Thank you, President Verheilig. This item is before the board today. Staff is not recommending action of any sort here and really responding to direction by the board to commence a discussion with the board on setting the framework and for a supplemental water policy. That's what this staff report's intended to do here is give us a starting point. Staff's looking for direction and feedback from the board via this item. Just briefly then, an overview of the staff report in front of you, the background of supplemental water is, I think, something that's clear to every director on this board and probably most of those in attendance in the audience today. That is that the district currently relies almost wholly on the Napomo Mesa sub-area of the Santa Maria groundwater basin for its water supply. And in recent years, it has become clear that that sub-area of the Santa Maria groundwater basin is in a state of pumping imbalance. And for that reason, the district is focused on bringing supplemental water into the sub-area in order to return the basin to a state of balance and preserving that long-term health of our sub-area, our majority of our water supply. So this is our major or our main water resource, so it's important to the district to maintain the health of that basin into the foreseeable future. And though that in itself is the main purpose of supplemental water, to return this basin to balance and then to maintain that health through the foreseeable future. So that's what has us talking supplemental water. There are many other issues behind supplemental water. Of course, we've had the ongoing groundwater adjudication and the stipulated judgment that is coming out of that settlement envisions supplemental water. In fact, it envisions requiring the purveyors, of which we are the major purveyor here on the Napomo Mesa, requiring the purveyors to bring in supplemental water. So this is something that is looking us right in the face, and I think, again, I've had clear direction from the board along the way that supplemental water is something that we need to pursue as a district. And furthermore, the district has worked hard at convincing the county through its planning powers to require supplemental water be required for all new urban development, which overlies in the Napomo Mesa sub-area or would depend on the Napomo Mesa sub-area for water supply. So in taking that position, I think it's important then also that the district obviously work toward supplemental water projects and work to facilitate those projects in the community. I've laid out a basic outline of policy, if you will, where purchase of or reservation of water resources. Instead of reading these, I think it might be best to open this up for discussion at this point. I put these things in the staff report somewhat hesitantly in my board letter. We have to start somewhere, but I'm really looking to the board to get some feedback on what's in the board letter and hear if staff's on the right direction with this.
Well, at this time, I would like comments from, and if you don't mind, actually, I think I'd like to open it to public comment and get input, then bring it back to the board for our comments, and we can go back out to public comment. and then finally bring it back to the board to provide direction to staff and have our discussions and hammer it out. So with your indulgence, I would like to then open this item up to public comment for our supplemental water policy. And again, please state your name and for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. My name is Steve Kuhl, and my family and I are in the process of developing Tract 2513, which is a seven-unit project over on Frontage Road, a plan development. Your board in the past has seen our project many times, and you've endorsed the project. I'm also speaking on behalf of Bob Newdall, who is developing Tract 2514, which is an identical project next door to ours. They're sort of being developed in conjunction with each other with some shared facilities, although they are totally separate projects. What I wanted to do was make your board aware of a situation that both of us have run into with respect to your supplemental water charge of $11,900 per unit that we understand goes into effect under your ordinance number 101. And this may not speak directly to the matters raised in Mr. LeBrun's staff report because I haven't seen the staff report, but we did pick up the fact that this item is going to be discussed from your agenda, so that's why I'm here. Our both tracts 2513 and 2514 were approved by the county, again after review by your district, over a year ago. I can't recall the exact date. In January of this year, improvement plans for both projects were brought to your district. They were reviewed by Doug Jones at that time, and there was a checklist of just minor technical corrections that were given by Mr. Jones to our engineer for each project. And during the time between January and April, we didn't come back to the district for final sign-off on the plans because there were also some technical issues that we were working with the county on the plans relating to how the drainage areas were going to be designed, where the right-of-way lines were going to be, how wide the sidewalks were going to be, and things of that nature. So we figured once we get all those things worked out, then we'll bring the plans back to the district, get them signed off. We became aware of the introduction of your Ordinance 101 at the time that it had its first reading. I believe that was April 27. And the ordinance, of course, states by its language that it becomes operative 60 days after that date, which would be at the end of June. So realizing that we had a time issue, we then brought our improvement plans back and we said, we want to pay our fees for the project so that we can get things firmed up under the old rules rather than under the new rules. And at that time, we were advised by the district that notwithstanding the fact that the ordinance was not actually operative at that time, that we were still going to be required to pay the $11,900 per unit for our projects. In our case, we had to pay for five units. There were two existing units on the property, so that came to almost $60,000. In the case of Mr. Newdall's project, he had one existing unit on the property, so he had to pay about $70,000. And those payments were made under protest at that time, so the payments have been made. I want to make your board aware of the fact that we feel that we were grandfathered in under the old rules, that we should not be under the new ordinance. We've communicated with Mr. LeBrun about this. We've also had communication from Mr. Seitz about the issue. But so far it hasn't been resolved to our satisfaction. We realize your board has an obligation to plan for the future, that you have an obligation to acquire water sources, and that those sources are not going to be free. They're going to cost money. But the problem is at some point you have to decide when is a project grandfathered in under the old rules. And you have to recognize that when someone develops property, at some point they have to get financing for their project. And to get financing, you have to create a budget. And to create a budget, to get your financing lined up, as we have done, and then to be told you have another $60,000 in improvement fees that you have to pay, it throws everything out of kilter. Yeah, I think you can understand the position that puts us in. So, again, my purpose is to make you aware of this situation and to make you aware of the fact that we feel that our projects were grandfathered, that our improvement plans were substantially complete and substantially approved by the district prior to the time that your ordinance and the new fees went into effect. So that's my comment. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to respond.
I think this would be a good topic to agendize for future discussion. Yeah. Obviously, it would call for some response from our board, and we're not, we can't do that today. But I think we need to give some response.
Well, it could certainly be put on a future agenda, just like Dr. Burns said was.
Yeah, exactly.
Because our discussion today is going to focus on supplemental water and what are the policies regarding that, not when it's applicable for fees or anything. It's just what is it going to be used for? How is it going to be used? Who's it going to apply to? So on and so forth. So fees, that was a whole other issue back a ways.
All right.
But thank you very much for your...
So will we be advised then when it's agendized?
Yes, you will.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Kuhl.
Good morning. Homer Fox, I live in the district. I'd like to speak about the memorandum to buy water from Santa Maria, memorandum of understanding. There's a section in there called third-party claims. My question or concern would be that if the landowner group sues the city of Santa Maria to stop the sale of groundwater to Nipomo, can that be interpreted to mean that Nipomo will pay the legal fees for the city of Santa Maria? That's one item. The other item is I noticed that the board talks about supplemental water, and so the district could back off pumping to balance the depression on the Pomo Mesa. If that's what supplemental water is purchased for, I can see that. But I can't see doing that if it's going to allow the woodlands to pump all the water they want. And if that's true, wouldn't that be a subsidy of the ratepayers in the Pomo for the woodlands project? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fox. Okay, any further public input on the supplemental water policy? And seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board and open it up for discussion.
First, I think Mr. Fox's two issues are very helpful, and I appreciate him bringing them. I don't have a copy of the MOU with me today, so I know we did not intend to bring some responsibility for our district to pay for legal fees in Santa Maria, but whether the language could be interpreted that way, I would encourage our legal staff to look at and give us their best guess as to how that might work. As far as the woodlands, though, the woodlands also signed a memorandum of understanding with us to take supplemental water. They have not signed a contract, however, yet, so we're sort of in between intentions and completion. But it's not our intention. In fact, we halted the approval for the woodlands until we had that in hand with the county, and we still need to make sure that they follow through.
Mrs. Wilson?
Yes.
Please jump in.
For Michael LeBrun, please. How is the, have you had any input from Cal Cities, Rural Water, and the Woodlands in purchasing supplemental water helping? And it says here the district shall seek partners in developing supplemental water infrastructure and sources. Is that in reference to the developer's recent proposal or suggestion? And I think it's really important that we, as a district and the board, keep our word to the people that when we have, when we, you know, have the supplemental water program with Santa Maria, that this is not for growth inducement, that we have to be very careful because that was, otherwise the ratepayers are paying for something that, that they should be reimbursed for too, or something down the line. So I really think this is a good thing for us to be able to discuss a lot of these issues.
If I may,
Mr. LeBrun, please.
The first question being, have we heard from Woodlands, Cal Cities, or Rural Water? And we have no update on that. We are, of course, looking to see the other purveyor parties and Woodlands sign on to the stipulated the stipulation that is pending in front of the Santa Clara County Superior Court, and by doing so, if they sign on, then they are agreeing to what's outlined in that stipulation, which is taking a share or participating in a share of the supplemental water project that, again, that stipulation envisions. I'm making or trying to articulate the difference here, and that we're talking about supplemental water policy in general, which I envision that meaning we've got a current supplemental water project that is 3,000 acre feet coming through the stipulation. We envision additional supplemental water projects needed for any future growth that's planned, currently planned for the Mesa, or out as far, you know, beyond even the foreseeable future. I believe that's the district's position, is that urban pumping has caused this imbalance. We're ready to step up and take our responsibility, our portion of the responsibility for correcting the imbalance due to our current pumping, and we're looking for the other purveyors to share in that responsibility. And then in addition to that, we're looking to secure supplemental water in quantities that will meet the envisioned growth within our current district boundary. And then this district is taking a further step in its update of its sphere of influence, reaching out and saying we feel we'd be able to better protect our basin health if we have if we have the responsibility to water this broad sphere of influence off into the planning horizon, if you will, because I'd like to recognize that there's a general plan in place now that envisions the next 20 years, but that we simply can't estimate the quantity of water that may be needed in this area in 50 years from now. But we can say that it is a policy position that we feel that all future growth, and I don't have to quantify it, should be required to take supplemental water. And with that policy position, then, I think it's important for us to step up and say, to recognize the difficulty we've had in the last year as we've gone before the Board of Supervisors, which, of course, is our planning power in our area, in the South County planning area. And we've gone before the board numerous times and pushed for a planning area standard, as I've outlined, that requires supplemental water for all future urban growth. And what we've heard time and again from the broad community, the development community specifically, and I think we've seen this resistance from the Board of Supervisors, they recognize the problem, but they feel that there's no supplemental water available now, and this would mean a moratorium, and they seem reluctant to take that step, and we recognize that. So my point about seeking partners and developing supplemental water is that we're trying to balance. We We know that any projects we take on are necessarily paid for, financed for, or on the shoulders of our current customer base, because that's who pays us, and that's who pays us to do our work. And so we need to minimize that, but at the same time, we, with a position, a policy position, that all new growth within the district or outside the district that's up on this mesa needs to be supplemental water, well, then I think it follows that we need to facilitate those types of projects, supplemental water projects, I say specifically, and that way also protect the exposure of our customers to losing our current right to pumping groundwater. We have, as the board understands, a right to pump just the excess groundwater. And I think one potential scenario that this board sees going out in the future is that if development is allowed to occur outside our boundaries and it's allowed to be done on the groundwater basin, and these groundwater basins, these developments are done by the formation of mutual water companies, that can be done in a manner that puts their right to pumping groundwater above the district's right to pumping groundwater. And that's simply unacceptable, I think, to the district, to lose any right it currently has to groundwater, which again is a junior right to landowners, but it is some right. We do recognize some right to pump excess groundwater. So we're trying to balance these, if you will, competing issues. So that's where I'm coming from. Where it's important for us as a district to really facilitate supplemental water projects. Now, what that means on the other side, and you've expressed that, is now wait a minute. Doesn't that encourage growth? And I think the answer that we have to take on that is that growth is planned and approved by the planning agency, which is the county. And if we simply feel that in that water is certainly a constraint to growth, but it is not, having water does not give you approval for growth. And so that's where we have to be, is to say we're going to protect our position of our customers to the groundwater by making sure supplemental water is available, and then work our hardest to require that any growth that is approved by the planning agency is required to take supplemental water, whether they take it from us or from some other purveyor up on the mesa. So yeah, there's a difficulty there. But if we try to hold strong on supplemental water is required for all new growth, and then on the other hand resist the importation of supplemental water because we don't want to see new growth, I think it's very hard, in my opinion, to be taken seriously about our position that all new growth needs supplemental water. That's something that I'm having difficulty balancing, and I definitely need direction here from this board.
I have to say, here you express the pumping depressions have lowered the water table in some portions, and this condition invites seawater intrusion and irreversible condition. Yes. And this is one of my fears, and of course I brought my famous paper, you know, that shows all of this.
Sure.
So, you know, one of my main concerns is that we encourage the other purveyors to, you know, to help with bear the burden, and that we. We, and then until the water is actually coming through the pipes, I personally can't approve any more intense.
And the difficulty of that balance is that to say, well, until the supplemental water is in the pipe and available for any and all future development, we can't agree with any development. The difficulty there would be then that it would require the district and its current customer base to actually go out and acquire supplemental water, enough supplemental water for all the future growth on the sub area, and I feel that would put us in a position of great financial exposure, I believe, to speculate on what growth may or may not actually occur out in our sphere of influence or outside that, even to extend out to the sub-area. And building facilities is really a minor part of the cost. It's a significant cost. We're talking potentially $6 million to build a section of pipeline to connect to Santa Maria. But actually acquiring the resources is a much greater cost, and frankly not one that I think the district can afford as far as going out and acquiring that resource. And then have it available for any future development happens. So we've got a bit of chicken and egg, if you will, to say who should pay for and make all that supplemental water available before a developer is actually given the right to move forward. It's difficult.
Thank you. Mr. Wynn, you had your hand up.
I did. Mr. LeBrun, I must protest. We are a planning agency. We are a planning agency. We're not simply a water supply agency. In the old model, CSDs were not planning agencies. They were simply, you put in the pipes, you supply the water, shut up, we'll make the plans. That's not the legal situation we're in today. State legislature, starting in 2000, changed the rules. We are a planning agency. We don't plan what size houses. We don't plan density in some respects. But we are a water planning agency. And part of our powers, which we must exercise for the people here, is that we can regulate the pace of growth, not just the fact that we've got enough water so that everybody else can build. It's not in our interest to give up our planning powers to county planning and simply say, it's them, it's all them. It's not all them, it's us too. We're equal partners with them. And the state law now runs parallel processes for each of these, water planning and land use planning, and they run in parallel. And they have to certify back and forth at each level. And I think we need to, I mean, we fought hard to get those powers and to get the ordinances here in place so that we could exercise them. And I think it's important that we don't sell out. And you're not trying to lose authority here, and I appreciate that. But if you talk to general managers from old districts, they're going to tell you a scenario that's no longer functional. What we have here is the ability to say within our sphere of influence that in the next 20 years, we can supply for those. They can't just come along, and if they don't get an immediate yes, they can't just run out there and buy water from somebody and truck it in. It just isn't, they don't have that right. And it's important that we don't sell ourselves short. On the discussion material here, I have just a working from that to a rather trivial question, which would change of pace here, but we continue to use Napomo Mesa sub-area. Is this a time in the litigation when we should shift to using Napomo Mesa management area? Should we be using the language of the court? Because they just finished saying there's no sub-basins. Do we want to use the same language that the court's using so that these two things fit together? Or is that or are we jumping the gun? The settlement's not signed and therefore it's premature? I'm not sure on that. Maybe John has an opinion.
I don't think there's a distinction. I think either one works for the purposes of a policy discussion. I think what we're talking about is that Napomo sub-area or management area that is defined in the maps that were submitted to the court. There would just be one comment. Mm. I would agree with Director Wynn's analysis of planning, but I think you can only do that planning in the context of a water shortage. If the district has an abundance of water, we can't say you can't build because we have the water. It becomes an administrative decision as to what can be built. Secondly, I mean, and I'm not familiar with all these rules and regulations. I was when we were working on the Woodlands project. But there are limitations, for example, on this nexus thing. It is clear that, you know, that we issue intent to serve letters and will serve letters for our projects within our boundaries, which the county in turn has to honor. It's less clear to me that that works outside of our district boundaries. There are projects, I think, that we that are like 500 residential units or larger. There's some, it could be 400, I forget the exact number, where there is a requirement for consultation and approval of a water 20-year water plan that the district certainly has the right to contest. And, of course, any development outside of our boundaries is always going to be subject to CEQA, depending on the nature of the development. I think we... And what I'm saying here is, this is a mixture of policy and legal stuff. And I got to tell you, I think it's 60% or 70% policy and 30% legal. I think the legalities of this or the legal challenges, if the policy is right, there is no legal one. But just taking a look at it from a general perspective, the county does consider developments outside of our boundaries, and even if we don't like it, they go ahead and approve it. I mean, we know that. I mean, it's sort of a reoccurring theme. I think when you start taking a look at water, you take a look at water policy, the things that you have to balance is, for example, if we just took in the 3,000 acre feet, just to say that was it, and I know Michael's done water balance calculations. Let's just say it's hunky-dory. It comes out, you know, this works. I think two things happen. One is the water balancing on the Mesa is just limited to that 3,000 acre feet. Number two is it opens up a Pandora's box, because then future development, which is surely going to occur, at least in my experience here on the Mesa, they're going to be slopping up our return flows from our supplemental water. I mean, that's, and when you really kind of think about it, that is the reality. So it behooves our customer base from one policy perspective. I don't want to say that this is the only one, to say that, you know, we want all projects to have supplemental water. It creates a balanced approach to development, because it's just not our customers that are paying for supplemental water. It's the entire Mesa or the management area or the sub-area that is paying for supplemental water to the same extent that we are. And I agree with Michael that what we want to do is we want to form partnerships. Now, we may have part of it, a court-imposed partnership between us, Cal Cities, the Mutual Water Company, Rural Water Company, and the Woodlands. But the reality of it is if future, even if that were to come into being, and then new development that was approved by the county wasn't required to take supplemental water, in other words, form a mutual water, do whatever the legal wranglings are to do it, what you end up with then is new development still sucking down those return flows from those partners that have bought into the supplemental water project. So I think we and there's no good answer to this. I mean, I'm not trying to say, you know, this is the only answer, but it seems to me from a water policy issue, one of the balancing policy perspectives is that if development is going to be on the Mesa, it should be under the same conditions that our residents are developing. In other words, on supplemental water. And that every development or new development, whether they be within rural, Cal Cities, us, pay to bring the basin back into equilibrium. I guess my biggest fear is that we sit here in the long run and we've solved our problems, you know, our issues, and we have supplemental water. But still, development continues to occur, and what all you're seeing is our customer base supplementing through the return flows, because you can't count on other political bodies to agree with everything that we do. Just like we don't agree with every decision other political bodies do. It's like Michael says, a chicken and an egg. How do you address that? And then, but going along with that,
we keep using this chicken and egg. I've got news for you. The egg's hatched and it's had grandchildren. They're already changing inside the district water demand by nearly 50% with this multi-use going up three stories stuff. And we haven't even responded as an agency. And that's not someplace outside to be annexed. They're increasing our water demand inside, and it just goes along.
Well, we have responded with the allocation for residential, a portion, you know, the one item, you know, one of the categories would be applicable to residential units in mixed-use development.
But all we did was give them a great big green light that says you can build as high as you like and we'll give an allocation. I mean, I think Mrs. Wiersing's concern is legitimate. If some of these prospective partners, you know, want to bring in 10,000 acre feet a year, and they've said so publicly as a matter of their policy, and if you're saying we have no planning powers unless there's a shortage, we've just guaranteed that we'll never have any planning powers ever again.
Let me just revise that. That wasn't, obviously we have the ability to plan this supplemental project. Okay, I mean, we're clearly a partner in that. What we probably don't have the authority is to have planning on the next supplemental water project. I mean, you sort of have to, you know, look at this as a time thing. If this is going to be the primary supplemental water project for the next 20 years, let's just use that figure hypothetically, then how do you look at it if you squeeze that project down to a three-year supplemental water project by, you know, whatever, the 3,000 acre feet? All you're doing is, in my mind, is encouraging two things. One is for the Board of Supervisors to wrestle with a very difficult policy decision that we're trying to encourage them to make, which is every development has supplemental water.
Mm.
And B is, you're encouraging the next supplemental water project to occur. Those all might be good ideas, and I'm not saying they're bad or
the problem, John, it seems to me, is that we're all working on the second project, and we're not working on the first.
Well,
the second project is, there's no water in the first 3,000 feet, 3,000 acre feet, for a lot of new growth. Now, there's a little bit there within the district and so forth. Yeah. But there's not enough to do somebody like Kenyatta or large projects outside the district. Exactly. It's not there. And we're negotiating with them to bring in their water, and we haven't brought Cal Cities, Rural Water Company, and the Woodlands to the table and got them to sign. And they're not new growth. That's depressions that are already created. And I just don't think we should be designing the second project until we get the first project in agreement. And we're not there. We're a long way from there. In fact, we may never get there.
If I may respond, then, so you just said that we shouldn't start the second until we finish the first, and we may never finish the first.
Well, I would suggest that
we've got a number of parallel paths that we need to do our best to resolve as we go down. I had direction from the board just months ago, as we were talking about a 3,000 acre foot project, to open my eyes to the fact that there's more growth planned in the general plan, planned growth that within our community and outside in our sphere of influence that we have designated, that there is some planned growth out there. And so we're trying to recognize that and say, well, let's have our eyes open to that and put together a supplemental water project that does the best to to bring in enough water for what's envisioned as growth on the mesa.
But if the partners for phase two are very happy to pay, and they may or may not, depending on what the deal is, but let's say that they're ready to go. Are we going to simply move on to that and ignore the fact that we have pumping depressions and we've done nothing to change that?
I don't think one ignores the other. What the project, in reference to a project that's on the table right now with the development community, is a project to build a pipeline that meets Project 1 needs, if you will, the way you've defined this, and Project 2 needs. And that they are willing, since they're speculating on growth that Project 2 would feed, the supplemental water Project 2, if you will, would feed, they're saying, hey, how about if we build the pipeline and finance it? So that's their partnership. That's what they're trying to come forward and say. And I don't see if entering into such an agreement would either reduce the district's financial exposure to Project 1 and or Project 2, and if entering into such an agreement could conceivably speed up the pipeline, which would feed both Projects 1 and Projects 2,
but
then it would make sense.
But our ratepayers are being asked to pay for the entire first 3,000-acre feed. I mean, we don't want them to, but there's nobody else out there ready to pay for that.
Well, actually, we have... Again, I think we're working on that. With every effort we can through our water council and through this settlement through the courts. Because again, if we get those partners, those purveyors to sign, then they are committing to a percentage of supplemental water.
No,
they haven't yet.
No, but are you suggesting that we must wait for them to sign? I mean, it seems to me we need to pursue Project 1 regardless from the district standpoint.
In other words, regardless of what it costs our ratepayers, we're going to build it. We don't care. They're going to have to pay the bill regardless. I don't think so.
Well, I don't think that's what's being said.
Well, actually,
we're the only people.
What is our position if no other purveyor steps up? I think that's a big if. We've been assured by council that the stipulation is something that at least two of these other purveyors agree to. We have an MOU in with the third party, and that's Woodlands, where we feel that we have fair legal standing to require them to get on board if they can't see it through this court settlement. But if they don't, again, the district's in a position where we've recognized a pumping imbalance that, if continued and if allowed to continue, will lead to a threat to our ground, our only source of supply. It seems to me we are in a position, a pretty desperate position, to get out and obtain other sources of water, supplemental water to bring into this mesa.
I know that a moratorium would be a terrible thing, but I tell you, the people that elected us would take a moratorium instead of them having to pay for the Woodlands water.
We'd only be able to achieve a moratorium in our service boundary, and that's the problem. We don't have the power, the planning power otherwise, to put a moratorium in place on this entire, on the land that overlies the sub-area of the basin. So by putting our customers in the moratorium, and we certainly could, we have a water moratorium ability that doesn't stop Kenyatta or any other growth that may happen in our sphere of influence. And in fact, if they're able to achieve a source of water that is the Napomo Mesa subarea, as we've outlined, it is fathomable that they get a mutual water company in place and start taking more groundwater out of this subarea and take a seniority to us in water right.
I'm sorry. In terms of my own, if this is policy, the policy I would support is we do not build this pipeline, period, unless the costs can be shared by the other purveyors. I'm not going to support a project that our people have to pay for every drop of water, which will go over a return flow out to the Woodlands, and everybody else uses our water for free. Cal Cities gets it for free, the Woodlands gets it for free, and our people pay the bill. I'm not going to go for it. I'm sorry. I don't think there's a vote out there in the public to support it. And by the way, a moratorium here in the district, 80% of the growth happens inside the district. believe me, it's not an insignificant thing. Now, I hate a moratorium, but I'm not going to charge everybody their water. I mean, that's crazy. And by the way, if three of us are crazy enough to support it, I think those three will get recalled. I don't think it's going to happen. But I don't think there's anybody that crazy on the board.
I'd like to, Mr. Trotter, you haven't had a chance yet.
From day one, when we discussed getting supplemental water, I said we should pursue Woodlands, Rural, and Cal Cities and get their name on the contract.
Right.
And we haven't done that, and time is slipping away. We're progressing with the development of a pipeline, and with no assurance that you have a verbal assurance, but that's worthless.
I think they have the assurance that if they don't sign, we'll build it anyway.
Well, that's what's going to occur. The path we're taking now, that's what's going to occur. And I think the fact that the builders want to finance the pipeline is a separate issue entirely.
Yeah.
It should be explored, but taken with a grain of salt.
Mrs. Worsley.
Yes. What I think about the developers getting involved is going to really slow down the process. And I've heard rumor that the ratepayers in Santa Maria just may start to protest all this water usage that can maybe limit their lifestyle or something. But this is what I've heard. And it is concerning, and it's possible. So I think that with the developers' involvement, it's just going to slow down and complicate the issue. And thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. Mr. Eby?
Yes, I do have something to say. I asked for this to be put on the agenda because I was worried that we were suffering from supplemental water emission creep. We had originally wanted supplemental water for one reason, and all of a sudden it became apparent that everybody out there without an assured supply of water thought that supplemental water was going to be for them. And I wanted to make sure that we had a policy up front for all the decisions that we do make that we haven't made yet, that we could look back on and say, why are we doing this? Well, we're doing it because of the policy. So I wrote a memo to Michael and expressed my concerns and what I thought ought to be in the policy, and they were a few fundamental things. One is that we should describe in our policy what the intended use for the supplemental water is, and second, what the priorities for that use. Those are the really fundamental things I think need to be in this. And what is in this right now is essentially that. The fundamental use is to supplement the sub-area that has been overdrawn primarily because of the NCSD over-obligating water, obligating more water than the sub-area can safely supply. So these concerns are in the written policy here, and I have no problems with the priorities and the general text of what's written. The only problem that I did have is I'll get back to that later, but the basic things cover what I'm concerned about, and that is that the intended use is to balance the basin, and also our obligations are to the current customers in the form of protecting their supply, number one, and to augment their supply so that we can build out within our current boundaries, and then to look at the water supply that we need to fill out the sphere of influence. Now, the urban water management plan, which will be done sometime this year, will give us the best, most current estimate of how much water we need for build out and cover the sphere of influence. It's not until that point that I think that we ought to decide on how much to renegotiate with Santa Maria for on supplemental water. If the number for the sphere of influence, or if the number for the build out says we need 5,000 acre feet per year, then I would say that's the minimum we need to talk to Santa Maria about. If it says $6,000 for the spirit influence, then we ought to consider, do we want to obligate ourselves to that right now? But that's something we can decide once we know these numbers. I don't think that, and it doesn't say in what's written here, that we have any obligation to supply future growth in the form of future growth which is beyond the current general plan. And it doesn't say that in here, so I'm not going to argue that. And that's what I hear arguing right now, is an implication that we're trying to, or considering making water available for general plan amendments that aren't in our vision right now. I think the argument for that will be later. And that will be covered, really, or limited by how much we go for. If we go for 6,000 acre feet per year, and 6,000 acre feet only covers our boundaries, our sphere of influence, the part that we want to sell to the other purveyors, so be it. That means that we're not, if that's the case, that means we're not providing water for growth beyond the general plan. And if we stick to that, just the size of our project will keep us from providing water for growth that doesn't, that's not on the books. So as far as what this says right now, the only exception I have is the flavor of this statement that says the district will seek partners. Of course, we're seeking the partners in the form of the purveyors because we've already agreed to that. But I don't think we ought to say that we're seeking partners beyond those other purveyors. We might entertain or consider other partners, but I don't think that our policy should be out to go out and seek partners just because it might be a little cheaper. We might be willing to pay the extra price if it means that we can have essentially the same financial burden on our customers. I just read today that Nacimiento is going to get $2.5 million in federal funding. We haven't looked at federal funding. We have looked at state funding. So there are other sources up before I think we go to the private developers. I think there are other sources that we ought to look at to see if we can get money from them that won't require us to obligate water to people that aren't in our general interest. One more thing is, two more things really. One is I take exception to something that was said today about the stipulation requires the purveyors to bring in supplemental water. The stipulation does not require us to do anything. The stipulation says the NCSB contemplates bringing in water, and therefore the purveyors will buy that water from the NCSD. There's nothing in the stipulation or any court order that says we're required to buy supplemental water. We're contemplating it. We're doing that on our own volition. We're not doing that on court order. There is no court order or decision that says we have to get supplemental water. We're contemplating it because it's in the best interest of our customers. The other exception that I had was people are worrying about, well, the return flow is good. If we get supplemental water and nobody else signs on to it, they're going to get our return flow. Well, that's like saying, I'm rich, some of my money trickles down to local shopkeepers, and they make money off of me. So be it. We don't have any problem right now with the return flow from our sewer plant going to Cal Cities. Mm-hmm. I don't see any objection to that. So the argument that our return flow from our supplemental water is going to go to other people, well, that's just a fact of life. That might happen. But I wouldn't make an argument that that's the reason that we need other people is because they're liable to get our return flow. They're getting our return flow now. So the policy as it's written, or at least the verbiage that's in this document, generally I have no exception to it because it addresses who the intended users are, our customers, and possibly people in our sphere of influence, and we're also protecting our supply by getting supplemental water. So that's all I have to say about that.
Any other...
I have a question of staff.
On your second page, what distinction do you make between number 3 and number 4?
Number 3 and 4 are very similar, actually, to number 1 and 2, except I'm talking in 1 and 2 about the district's responsibility for reducing pumping current and then watering the district's foreseeable future water demands, and that's 1 and 2. And then in 3, I talk about basically the same statements where we facilitate supplemental water projects which allow other purveyors utilizing the Nepomuk Mesa subarea to meet responsibility. Again, that's responsibility for reducing the current groundwater pumping and returning the basin to long-term health. And then number 4, the distinction is that it's those partners also receive water for their foreseeable growth.
So if 1 and 2 were put together to say returning it to its long-term balanced health and to meet foreseeable water demands without upsetting that balance. I mean, that's basically what you're saying. 1, return the balance, and 2, allow more growth without upsetting the balance?
Well, and I see those as distinctly different.
Okay, and then 3 and 4...
1 reflects on growth.
Yeah.
And 1 is simply saying, look, if we didn't allow another house to be built on the Mesa, actually 1 is within our service area, we have a responsibility to return to our portion of the imbalance on the basin. So that's what 1 is about. And then 2 is saying, we do foresee growth. There is planned growth in our current service boundary, and we should recognize that planned growth and get supplemental water available for it, or else we're just back to imbalance.
So we don't re-upset the balance.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then I take and I put that same position in place for the fellow purveyors on the Mesa.
Yeah, 3 and 4.
And then basically try to say the same thing for new development that's outside current service areas of the purveyors, and saying that recognizing, and whether it's about our return flow or not, if our water, if our supplemental water project goes through and we return this basin to balance, and then future development occurs without supplemental water, because now the county and everyone says, hey, the Mesa's in balance. Thanks, purveyors. Round of applause. And then new development is allowed to go on now because of that, and it's allowed to go on and depend on the groundwater basin. Then we're back in imbalance. And as we've outlined, I think there's a very real possibility then that then the Basin Management Committee says, oh, we're 20 years down the road. Sub-area management committee, excuse me, the Nepomuk Mesa Management Area Committee, Management Committee, says, hey, we're in imbalance again. Purveyors,
go out,
more supplemental water.
Water.
And that's the way it's set up. That's what the courts, whether they've, that's how it's envisioned by the courts. And I don't want to mix words or get people objecting on my words, but I think we all understand that. That's how we're seeing this stipulation come down right now. Makes it very clear that the purveyors are responsible for maintaining this balance on the basin. So I think it's important for us as part of protecting our customers' interests
that
balance is achievable.
What would you think then of changing the order of number 2 and number 3 so that we do number 1 and then number 3? So in other words, we deal with the imbalance first.
Are those meant to be in order of priority and number?
They are, and that was my intention, and I would agree with that.
And then that
makes, in other words, saying that, look, let's make sure we import enough water. Again, if we stopped all growth today, we need to make sure that we import enough water right now to balance this basin, and that the purveyors should share equally in that responsibility.
Okay.
Equally, you know, for their share of pumping. That's equality there. It doesn't mean that we expect Cal Cities and or rural to take the same amount of supplemental water as us. It's the same ratio to pumping.
So I would change the order there so that those two come first.
Right.
In priority.
And then recognize some growth within current service areas.
And then recognize growth both within and without our district boundaries. Yeah, I'd like to see that change, maybe.
Okay.
But I think Michael did a good job in defining what the purpose of the supplemental water is for. You know, that was one of the things that always bothered me in these meetings, that the people didn't understand that the first 3,000 feet was to balance help balance the basin.
And I've done on that point, if I may, I did pass out some supplemental materials that may look familiar. I'm continuing to work on this balance. A spreadsheet, if you will, and I feel it's that it's important that as we come to the management committee table following the settlement agreement, that we're on the same page, if you will, and this is the page that I'd suggest that we be on, and this relies on our modeling work that we had SAIC do in order to compute what the district has long felt is the allowable yield of the Napomo Mesa subarea, and then also the district's estimates for amount of return flow, and then in doing that, looking at what our current water demands are and what types of supplemental water quantities would be required to balance our current demands and those of the other purveyors. That said, again, this relies on our modeling work done by SAIC as part of the adjudication process. And I want to remind the directors, again, that it will be the Basin Management Committee. There's no limitation for the amount of supplemental water we might actually have to bring in order to correct and maintain basin health. We talk about in the stipulation there's a 2,500 acre foot number, and then it's more or less as the Basin Management Committee defines or requires, and that will be based on, again, basin monitoring, actual water levels. So I think it's important for us to understand that, but this is our starting point, and all we have and what we have is simply as a starting point. And that's what I'm attempting to do there.
Yeah, I want to say that in looking through this, and, you know, it's been gone through several times, but I think it's a good starting point to develop a supplemental water policy that deals with supplemental water, not the infrastructure, not the sizing of it, just, you know, what it applies to, how it's going to be used, who is going to use it. Who has exceptions, so on and so forth. I think we've achieved that. Now I'll probably put a little more meat on the bones. Mr. Trotter, did you have...
I agree with everything that's been said.
Okay. So, I'm going to reopen it now to public comment and then bring it back to the board and provide staff with final direction, and we can then take a little break. So, Mr. Fox, could you come to the microphone and state your name? And
Larry, I don't want to ever disagree with you, but you never closed this to public comment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, anyway, but I would like the board, if possible, in a few words, answer my two questions that I presented earlier. Thank you. And if you need me to reiterate them, I will. But if you don't remember them, I will let...
Would you repeat them?
Would you please repeat them?
My first question is, will the ratepayers have to pay for Santa Maria's legal fees if the law group sues them for selling water to Napomo, the city of Santa Maria, which is, I think, is a high likelihood. The next question is, if the board buys 3,000 acre-feet of water from Santa Maria and uses 2,500 acre-feet to offset the pumping on the Mesa to get balance, and the Woodlands Project does not participate, then I feel that the ratepayers are, in effect, subsidizing the Woodlands. So I'd like your comments on that, if you could.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fox. Well, Mr. Seitz, do you have some words of wisdom for us on that?
I don't know how much wisdom I have today.
I didn't bring my MOU with Santa Maria.
It's
near the back.
There's an Article 4 in the agreement, and that's an indemnity clause, and it says, NCSD, its successors and assigns, shall hold harmless, defend, and identify city, its officials, employees, agents, successors, and assigns, from and against any all liabilities, obligations, claims, damages, losses, actions, judgments, suits, costs, blah, 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 which may be imposed on or incurred or asserted against city as a result of breach of NCSD's obligation, the conduct of NCSD's operations associated with the interconnection to the city's retail distribution system, and subsequent delivery of supplemental water to its customers. So it seems to me with the indemnity clause, I haven't really analyzed it specifically, your question, so it's sort of on the run, that we have to be in breach of contract, and or two, the conduct of our operations associated with the intertie. So now, the third-party claim, which I think you're referring to, is 4.2.
Right.
Okay. It says, promptly following notice of any third-party claim for which the city is indemnified here under. So it does not seem to me, just looking at this in the context of this question with 2 minutes to look at it, that it would apply to a law lawsuit.
I'm
going to
take your word for it.
No. You didn't catch all my caveats, Homer. You're asking for a legal opinion with me just looking at some words. So
I just wanted to be on record.
Okay. Well. Okay. The second one is I don't have the Santa Maria, the Woodlands MOU in front of me. So that's a more difficult one. I do agree with Michael that our water law council says we have standing, that there is a requirement that they participate in supplemental water. And I think that's the only answer I can give you right now at this point in time. And the other thing is that you have to realize is that, you know, it's our expectations, although, you know, we're, of course, many times frustrated with our expectations, that the MOU, those parts of the MOU were actually drafted and heavily edited by Cal Cities and Rural's attorneys. So our expectation is that they're going to sign. It's also our expectation that Woodlands is going to sign.
Why isn't this activity progressing?
Well, I think it is. And the way I don't have the judgment in front of me, but the way I understand it is that they had till some date in August. There's a September.
August 27th.
August 27th.
Of what year?
This year.
This year.
This year. So
right.
I think on August 27th, what will happen is that judgment and those signature cores that are on that stipulation for judgment are going to be more or less in cahoots with the remainder of the litigation, and those people that don't sign on the judgment are going to be in cahoots in defending the future groundwater adjudication litigation. So, I mean, that's the idea. If you're not a signatory, you're still a party. You know, you're still involved in the groundwater adjudication. So we're just going to have to wait and see how that plays out on the 27th. Otherwise, you know, we're just speculating as to who's agreeable and who's not.
Okay, is there any other public comment? And seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board.
I have a question and comment.
And then Mr. LeBrun also has some.
About a year ago, when you were debating whether to sign this MOU or with Santa Maria or not. I asked the same question. I said, if somebody sues the city of Santa Maria over this water transfer, is the NCSD liable? And I believe the answer you said at that time was, anybody can sue anything, anybody for anything, but what this says is that Santa Maria will cover the costs if they are sued.
Yeah, I mean, we're only being identified now. Sorry, I hate to sit around and give legal. In fact, I'm not going to do it. So, okay.
But thank you, Mr. Sayers. Mr. LeBrun.
If I may add, just on the last public comment, the question in regard to Woodlands, and if that development's allowed to go on and they don't participate in supplemental water, was the scenario, aren't the district customers simply subsidizing their water demands at Woodlands? And I'll just open that up, and let's take Woodlands off, the name Woodlands away, and say if development is allowed to go on, and you know, new development's allowed to go on the Mesa and use the Napoma Mesa sub-area for water supply, aren't district customers, isn't the district customer supplemental water project simply subsidizing that development? And I think yep. The simple answer to that is yes, and that's why it is so important for us to get supplemental water available for all future development that's planned on this Mesa. I mean, to facilitate that, or alternatively, to shut off development on the Mesa. And I think we can analyze which we are most or more likely able to complete or to be effective at. Yeah. And I would say to you that it's that water planning that we're more likely to be able to have a real effect on. That's basically where the position I'm coming from is to say we have limited planning powers to say what ultimate new development's allowed out there, especially when it steps outside our sphere of influence or our current services boundary. And we recognize that any new development that occurs on the Mesa and is reliant on the sub-area will impact our groundwater.
Which is why we need to encourage and support the county to put in place these planning area standards that define supplemental water in for new development.
But I think we also need to emphasize that the Woodlands is 1,320 homes, a commercial complex, a 500-room hotel, and a golf course that is already planned and in the works. So that's my emphasis. And they will affect our pumping almost immediately, I believe, once they're in full operation. Mm-hmm. And it's huge. I mean, if anybody's driven by there lately.
It is. Yeah, I would love to have, I won't say love, that's not the right word, but it would be very gratifying to see on the website on who signed a signature for Cal Cities, a signature for Rural Water Company, a signature for Woodlands. We could then sit down and start discussing with them regards to sharing of costs. Unfortunately, that's not the case. And until they do sign, I don't know, maybe we could approach them as to starting to work on a contract regarding sharing the costs of the project and so on and so forth, but I'm not too sure they'd be willing to step up to it. Now, Mr. Trotter probably has some words of wisdom.
I'm being redundant again, and I apologize for that. But why are we not doing what Larry just suggested? We've discussed it many times. Well, both you and John have come up with very plausible answers, but yet time passes, and we're not progressing here. This whole discussion is a reflection of apathy. We're not moving. Why aren't we moving?
I think those discussions are ongoing. We are moving. Those aren't discussions I take part in because there's a lawsuit at hand, and we've hired Jim Markman, who's leading those discussions for us.
And has he told us we should not approach Woodlands, etc.? Has he told us that?
I have contacted both Cal Cities and Rural, the general managers of, or owner in one case of those water companies, in order to get their pumping numbers to work on my accounting sheet that I've described and shared with you. Both gave me their pumping totals for 2004 and said further discussions along these lines need to go through our water council. And that's where it's at. We're in the middle of a court case, and again, by the end of August, we expect to see who's going to stipulate. Our water council tells us he expects that they'll stipulate. That is the first step in having them sign on a commitment to this supplemental water source. So I have to say that we are working on that.
It would be just wonderful if, you know, if it was quicker, but unfortunately these things do take time. With that said, I think we've sort of hashed this fairly well. Does everybody feel that the direction that staff is taking...
Is this document part of the discussion? It should include the Woodlands in, because all it has is NCSD, Cal Cities, and Rural.
Well, those are the only numbers we know at this point in time.
We know how many homes are going to go in, and I think we can make a pretty good guess at...
The reason that doesn't include Woodlands is because that's an effort to define how much supplemental water each of these purveyors is taking in order to meet their commitments for the current imbalance of the basin, and then how much supplemental water that they have reserved for any future growth. In Woodlands' case, they're simply a 500-acre-foot commitment, and it doesn't put any then restriction on the future. The problem I'm seeing with the 3,000-acre-foot project is if we do not, as purveyors, define and agree upon how much of this water is to offset your current pumping and how much is for future growth, then there's already been stated confusion there. Where one of these purveyors is looking at that water and saying, "Oh, that's perfect for this big development that's planned in my area." And
yeah, we have Cypress Ridge.
So that's why.
I have a question. You said. I thought you said that the direction is clear what staff's supposed to do with this. I'm not clear with where we go from here with this.
I said, do we feel that this, you know, what we have here is sort of the bones with meat on it.
What I would suggest, just as something to throw out, I mean, really the further discussion on this, I think it's kind of dependent on two things. One is John Ufrat is working on a water projection for water that is not controlled by a water purveyor, and I think that document is going to be very germane to the discussions. I know that there are developers within our sphere of influence, and I know that there are developers within the rural sphere of influence that have been participating in discussions, and I think, you know, we would need that figure, especially figures for within our sphere of influence. I mean, I think that is, you know, we maybe aren't legally binding to serve that particular area, but when we agreed to incorporate them into our sphere of influence, we told LAFCO that we could serve them within a 20 years. So I think that figure is important. And lastly, I think also the figures on who signs that judgment, on who signs on that judgment on the by the 27th, is going to be a something that that seems to me is to be germane to these discussions in a material way. So my thought is that you would probably want to bring this back after August, not the next board meeting, but at some future. meeting during the month of September.
John, what form is the uncommitted water in at this moment?
Excuse me?
What form is the uncommitted water in at this moment?
Well, let me see if I can answer it this way. One is, and I think I want to put this a little bit of history. One is, we signed that MOU for the 3,000 acre feet before this became part of the judgment. I think the district had a different perspective of what that 3,000 acre feet is. I think the form of the, I guess the development community is that we're meeting with them to discuss that issue. It's been district staff's position up to this point that that we would agree, you know, that we're, what we're thinking about is you bifurcate this project into basically three separate parts. One is the construction of the intertie. Who wants to participate in the construction? How big should the intertie be? Number two is it's up to the development community, besides us within our district, because we are obviously negotiating for that. It's up to the developers out there to make their own determination. And remember, these developers are tied to the water purveyor. They're tied to rural Cal Cities or us to negotiate the reservation fee. The deal that they're going to make with the city of Santa Maria, but it's a reservation fee. Obviously, people within our the going price is $1,250 an acre feet. That's we don't perceive that shaking one way or another. And so that's the other issue. The other issue is that Michael has hit upon is an area planning standard requiring supplemental water. That issue. We're waiting for John Ufrat to come up with some figures as to what that commitment is, because that, if we follow sort of like the orchard model up there, that means that as these mom and pops develop out there, that they are going to be paying a lump sum payment as a condition of their building permits to be able to build, so that they are contributing to supplemental water. And otherwise, what we're looking at there is an equity-based sharing of supplemental water, allocating return flows to balance the groundwater basin and those types of issues so that no single group, no single water purveyor, no single person should be riding on somebody else's back on development approvals. And that's been the goal, and that's where we're at. I think the... we're looking at, in a very loose manner, agreements that would have the potential to facilitate private development of the water line where it would be transferred back to the district. There is some thought out there that private development of the water line could save as much as 30% on the waterline costs. We don't know that. We don't even know if that type of agreement is possible, but it's being researched as far as is really private development an option? Not the only option, but is it a feasible option? And B is, will it actually save money?
Even the $6 million is a vague estimate.
We don't know that.
Right. I think I provided the board a recent document called probable costs, which include, and depending on certain segments of the pipeline, including if we have to come up Orchard to Southland, that adds about $1.2 million to the project. Depending on our connection point, may add an additional $1 million to the project. Without those two adds, the analysis done by Cannon and Associates most recently, plenty of caveats, including the caveat that calls it a probable cost, not a cost estimate, for good reason. It has us at about $6 million, the probable cost. But then we have the two potential adds up to millions more. Yeah, that's right.
And that's the best they can do at this point. You can't nail it right on the head. So.
Absolutely not. And I know, you know, as you all know, for our rate study, we estimated a $6 million project with a 3,000 acre foot capacity. And my hope is that by adding the capacity that reflects on, again, planned growth in the community, that the cost of the project per acre foot may stay within that range. In other words, if we double the capacity and the cost of the project doubles, well, then we're still within the cost per acre foot that we've estimated in our rate work, if you will. Now the question is, how does that additional cost and capacity get reserved in the or how's it paid for in the pipeline? Again, if it comes to the district customers, then we've got some work to do. We can look at other funding and these types of things. I want to touch on what John said in here in this policy, and it's something as far as the supplemental water policy, as I opened up, that I really tried to avoid was project-specific discussion or time and space-specific discussion, if you will. The county will come up with an estimate for how much water. The county has estimated, we've got estimates that the county's made in the past, recent past, for how much water will be required for planned development up on the Mesa. They'll come up with a new estimate. And in 6 months, in a year, in 10 years, they'll come up with yet another estimate. There will continue. That estimate will continue to move. And our supplemental water policy, if we write it correctly, I think can be immune to having to be changed just because there's a new estimate for how much supplemental water will be or how much water will be needed. Because our policy, the cornerstone of our policy, is that all new growth on the Mesa, all new urban growth requires supplemental water. So if they estimate tomorrow that that'll need 1,000 acre feet, well then it'll be 1,000 acre feet of water then. And if that increases to 4,000 at some point in the future, well then that's 4,000 acre feet of supplemental water. Now for planning of our Santa Maria project, we definitely need to, this is our current supplemental water project, our premier, we definitely need to try to recognize the current planning horizon, have our eyes wide open to what potential growth we see both within and outside the district. But it's not something that we can't expect to do a supplemental water project today or ever be able to set a point in time to do a supplemental water project that's going to meet all future needs of the Mesa. And if we continue to wait for that day and wait for that estimate, we never get started. So we have to pick a point in time to start. I would suggest that we try to put down a policy that will guide us on our current supplemental water projects and on projects off into the future.
Can you send this to us by as an attachment?
Email attachment, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
I just want to repeat that. The fact that this doesn't have quantities of water in it is fine with me, because these policies should allow you to guide yourself on what quantities of water you go after. So I think as a fundamental thing to look back on, when we decide how much water we need and who we need it for, if we look back on this policy, I think it can guide us. And that's what I was looking for here, is intended uses and priorities.
Okay. Well, with that said, if there's no further thoughts or wisdom to provide staff, then does staff feel...
Well, I think what I hear is that once we get after the 27th and we get some, and I agree with Michael on his numbers analysis, that we would come back to the board and revisit this issue so that we would have some specificity on where the different water purveyors are. All I can tell you this is the different water purveyors at different times have been participating in discussions regarding the size of the... have been at meetings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How is is your time today, Mrs.
Well, I'm getting a little concerned.
You're getting antsy. I think we've got over the meaty stuff.
Yeah, let's play it by ear.
Because we could take a break right now.